to the O Woman podcast, where we discuss so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries. And we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me for the show today. This is episode 46 of the O Woman podcast. Today's show is more everything you ever wanted to know about vaginas and cervixes. So the show that I did previously that was everything you ever wanted to know about vaginas and vulvas was definitely more heavily focused on vulvas. And today there's a lot more information about vaginas and also the interesting area of our body called the cervix. So first of all, really cool thing about the vaginal opening that men don't have anything really that compares to, because if you're thinking about their penis or the little hole in their penis, we have an opening that can kind of appear to be open or closed depending on how we choose to sit. And it can swell or it cannot be swollen, which is a really cool thing. So a lot of people have likened the image of the vulva and the area around the vagina to kind of like an orchid or a flower or something like that. There's the imagery of the ability to open and close kind of cyclically, which men don't have that. The vagina technically is about 4 to 5 inches long, and it runs at about a 45 degree angle from the labia to the cervix. Now, the vagina is really cool because it has its own ecosystem inside the body, as do many other body parts. You know, there's a stomach ecosystem, there's a lymph ecosystem, all those things. But the vaginal ecosystem is really interesting because a healthy vagina is actually the cleanest place on your body. Cleaner than your mouth, cleaner than your feet, than your fingers and your toes, definitely cleaner than your butthole. And a lot of the thoughts about vaginas are that somehow they're dirty or they're smelly or they're foul or something. But they're really the cleanest place. Now, a healthy vagina, I've talked about this before too in the episode where I talked about body smells, is supposed to smell. I mean, it's not supposed to smell so wafty that you can smell it across the room. It's not supposed to smell super, super fishy, but it's supposed to smell. And it's not dirty, and it's supposed to smell for the reason that there's lactobacilli inside of your vagina, keeping it healthy and taking care of it. This is the same bacteria that naturally grows in yogurt that's so good for your body. So there's kind of a sweet, pungent smell, odor that should be around in your vaginal region. Some days, depending on your cycle, depending on what you eat, depending on tons of other things, you can smell more strongly than other days. Also, of course, depending on if you've showered. But a vagina is supposed to smell. The concept of a flowery smelling vagina is ridiculous. And the concept of a dry vagina is ridiculous. Vaginas are supposed to be wet. They're supposed to have bacteria in them, just good bacteria, and they're supposed to smell. Now, another really cool thing about vaginas is they're natural acidity. They are really very acidic. So when you think about a pH scale, when you go down in numbers, the more acidic you get. So the average acidity of a vagina is about 3.8 to 4.5 on that pH scale. Coffee's a 5, and we know coffee's really acidic. Coffee, you know, can help you digest food. It can over-acidify your stomach if you drink a bunch of it. And our vagina is naturally more acidic than that, but it's not quite as acidic as, for example, lemon juice, which is about a 2. It's about as acidic, interestingly, as wine, which the concept of, you know, wine and women together, the author that I really love that I've mentioned in previous podcasts, Natalie Anger, she mentions how great of a pairing that really is, wine and women, because the acidity is about the same in wine and in a healthy vagina. Related to the ecosystem is vaginal discharge, and I know that when I first started having vaginal discharge as like a young woman, I was like, what is this crap? This is so annoying. It messes up your underwear. It affects your day. Every now and again, it will like go through your jeans, and so you're thinking, I feel so embarrassed. But you shouldn't be embarrassed. This is a normal thing. This is the way your body is supposed to work. It's part of your vaginal ecosystem. Interestingly, most of the discharge that you have that comes out of you, you know, can be different texture, different thickness, sort of different colors sometimes and have different smells. And that's based on lots of things, where you are in your cycle, stuff like that. But most of the content of that discharge is the same as what's in kind of your blood serum. So it's water, it's albumium or albumium. Oh wait, bumin? I'm saying it wrong. Albumin. There we go. It's albumin, which is like a protein in your body. And then there's some white blood cells and some mucin, which is the, you know, the oily stuff that's kind of coating or inside of your vagina and your cervix. So that's what's in your discharge. So it's not some gross, grotesque, otherworldly, you know, fluid. It makes a lot of sense what it is. And one of the things that that same author, Anger, mentions in her book, I mean, it makes sense that we have vaginal discharge. We are upright creatures. We don't walk on all fours. So the opening of our uterus points down, so gravity is going to take over. I mean, come on, that makes lots of sense. There's no way for us to have a healthy vaginal ecosystem and not have some discharge since we are upright humans. So a healthy vagina is one that has kind of a natural yogurty smell, sweet and pungent, and has a natural acidity of, you know, in the 4-ish, 4.5 range. Now, Natalie Andrew, that same author, her book is Woman and Intimate Geography, and I've mentioned her in like 3 or 4 other episodes because I think her book is so fantastic, and I'm currently rereading it, so I'm getting all excited about it again. She mentions that the interesting thing about sex is that semen, considering that it is really highly alkaline, as opposed to being opposite of acidic, it really disrupts the vaginal ecosystem for a certain period of time. So the more semen goes in, the higher the pH goes. So the pH rises, especially it's a lot higher than the average healthy vagina, right? You know, the first few hours after intercourse. And at the same time, that means your vaginal ecosystem and your vagina and all that stuff is at a higher risk of pathogens coming in to your body without a defense. Because part of the ecosystem of this area of your body's defense is that it's so acidic. Now, if you have sperm in you and your pH just went up a little bit and it became more alkaline, you have less of a defense against other pathogens that might be hanging out with the sperm, like, for example, STDs or things like that, or just other pathogens in general, like that could potentially give you like an infection or whatever going on in that part of your body. Another interesting thing about this is that as you have kind of, you know, one partner, your body gets a little bit more used to dealing with that type of semen, that specific semen, that specific pH of semen. Your body is better at recovering from having a dose of semen inside of it. And so it's more, a little bit more quickly, a little bit more able to quickly go back to its regular pH, which is the most healthy for its system. But if you have multiple partners, especially, you know, often, your body can't quite adjust quite as quickly. So the concept of, you know, of course, needing to have safe sex with these partners, but if you're not using a condom, that which is means you're getting semen inside of you, if you're not using a condom with the multiple partners, you're going to have a more difficult time, your ecosystem is going to have a more difficult time recovering from the fluctuations in pH because it's not all the same sperm. They're not quite as, your body's not quite as used to it. And at the same time, you're being exposed to 3 different partners, you know, microbes and pathogens and potentially STDs. So right at the time when your body really needs the most defense, which is, you know, a higher acidity in your vagina, you actually have less defense. So that's just something really important to think about when you're thinking about doing STD testing. I've mentioned that in the podcast, or you're just thinking about the experience that you're having with your partners. There's nothing wrong with having multiple partners. There's nothing wrong with having one partner, but just think about your body and being safe. Because as she points out in her book, you really need to be, you know, your body needs to be protected. And in at a time when it really needs it the most, it might be less protected because of not being used to certain sperm. Another interesting little fact about the vagina, which I already kind of knew this, but I'm just, it's extra interesting to think about. It's just how complex the entire thing is designed. And in a minute, I'm going to talk more about actually the whole anatomy of the whole thing. But the inside textures of the vagina, the different folds and the different kind of a ribbony almost texture that's inside in different places, creates friction for the penis in a really natural way, which has been theorized that part of that has to do with having the male ejaculate so that you can be impregnated, because that's the one of the main points of the vagina and one of the main points of the penis. You know, that's one of the theories. But also interesting is that your entire vagina, the entire length of it, secretes a natural lubrication. There was some theory in the past that there was like one, you know, kind of area in your body, in your vagina, that excreted the lubrication in one spot. But it isn't in one spot. It's like the entire wall of your vagina kind of leaks. You get turned on, you get excited about sex, and it starts to sweat almost or something. So I thought that was a really cool thing to note too. Now I also want to talk a little bit more about actually what the definition of the vagina is. Because there's some discrepancy in different institutions in our world about what they think about what the vagina is, and I'll explain in a minute. But on the most basic level, the vagina is the birth canal. That's another name for it, especially one that's used with midwives, doctors, doulas, people that work with women having babies and childbirth and things like that. So it is the birth canal. It's the same thing. And vagina means, in Latin, sheath, which means, of course, it was defined and named in reference to men being able to put their swords in the sheath. So it's a little bit like, man, what an anticlimactic, literally, name for our body part that isn't, you know, just for men's penises. And more importantly, it's for babies to emerge from, and it's for our own interest and pleasure, whether or not it includes a penis or not. So that's where the name came from. It means sheath in Latin. Generally, most people just in the world think of the vagina as being kind of the inside part only. But the medical definition of the vagina is that it's the muscular canal between the hymen and the cervix, which is mostly kind of how people think of it. But the legal definition is different. And I assume this has to do with talking about sex abuse cases and things like that, making sure that everything is covered. The legal definition includes the vulva in the vagina, so that entire genital region, the vulva, the folds of skin outside, I've talked about that in another episode, is covered in the vagina, which I think is a really good idea when you think about sex abuse and things like that. Wrap it up all into one word, because any offense is an offense. And some offenses people might feel are worse than others, but any sexual abuse is abuse. So it's a good idea to think of it as a unit for sure. Now I want to talk about the actual anatomy of the vagina, because I know I have a vagina. I know kind of what it's like. I've looked at parts of it in the mirror. Like, I understand the concept, but do I, like, actually know, like, really what's going on in there and, like, the layers and how complex it is? And until I read this book by Anger and also just did more research, like, I didn't know. I mean, how many women really grow up knowing the super scientific information about their vagina? They know not to let random people touch it. They know that it's a sexual thing. They know, you know, that stuff comes out of it. But they don't really know all the details about it and how everything works. So I really wanted to share that. So the inside layer it's called the lumen. And it's made in the same area. It's a mucosa. And in some places, it folds on the inside, like I mentioned before. The name for these folds on the inside kind of region of the vagina, you know, the canal, the main area that we're talking about here that touches the penis and touches other objects that go inside of it and the baby and stuff. The folded areas are called rugi, which really rugi is not just specific to the vagina. It's any place where an organ is kind of folded up or kind of accordioned up. And the reason it folds up and accordions up is because it's like the walls of the organ will fold up or accordion up. It's because it's trying to save space. So that's what the deal is with the vagina, because in our normal resting state, like I said, it's like 4 to 5 inches long. But when you get turned on, it elongates. And of course, when you're having a baby, it gets way wider and way longer. So it would be kind of a waste of our body space to have our vagina at full capacity all the time. So it really makes sense for it to kind of accordion up and save itself. Now, if you feel kind of inside of yourself, that bundle of ridges that's kind of, that's a few inches in and kind of towards your belly button if you're kind of curving your fingers up, that is some of that folded Ruji. The outside third, like the bottom third of the vagina that's closer to where the vagina goes to the labia, that is where almost all of the Ruji is, or pretty much all of it. And it's for stretching, like I just said, which I think is such a cool thing, but that's also some of the area that kind of is natural ridges for the penis too. And I find that that area that's bundled up is the area that is more sensitive to me sexually and what I would consider to be a portion of my G-spot, probably also the back end of my clitoris. So I think it's a really cool thing. No one has really proven any all of this stuff, you know, about what the G-spot and the clitoris and how they're connected and all that stuff, but that's how I feel about it personally. Now, like I mentioned before, vaginal lubrication, when you get turned on or something like that, it comes from just all the walls of your vagina, the inside area. And there's like a technical word for this. It's called vaginal transudation. And the reason that you actually lubricate is because there's a vascular engorgement in that area of the vagina, and it makes you lubricate naturally. And that's because you're turned on. That's how that's all related. So the layer that is the next layer out of the, you know, inside area, the inside canal, the lumen area, is called, it's the second layer, it's called the lamina propria. And that area is made up of a lot of very loose, cellularly rich connective tissue. It's made up of mucous membranes. This probably isn't as interesting to you as the other part, because this is never touched as sexually. It's made up of capillaries, and it's made up of lymph vessels. So it's really interesting, I thought, I wanted to mention this, how much of our lymph system, your lymph system goes in so many places of your body, and you need to keep your lymph system healthy, too. So if you're thinking about just keeping healthy, keep in mind that it goes through your vagina too. Your lymph system is related to your vagina. Everything is a big cycle here. Your entire system is a big ecosystem in addition to your vagina being an ecosystem too. Now, the outer layer, the third layer, is just more connective tissue. It's not that exciting, but it's more connective tissue. So that's kind of the three main layers of the vagina there. Now, when you're thinking about feeling things inside of your vagina, if you think about, hey, where do I usually feel having sex, feel other things, I tend to think feeling it in the lower portion of my vagina. And that's because the concentration of vaginal nerves are in that lower third. And some women feel more from the front third, kind of near your stomach. Like I was saying, you reach in, you can kind of push up and towards your belly button and feel that area. Some people feel more there than others. Some people just feel it more in their lower third. I feel it more in the front lower third, definitely. But there's not that many nerve endings at all in the upper two thirds of the vagina. And you got to think about it. Why do you think that would be? Why is the upper portion not as ridiculously sensitive as the lower portion? And one of the big theories is because it's better for having babies. With extra nerves comes the possibility for pleasure, but also the possibility for pain. So if you have less nerves up in the other portion of you, childbirth is going to be less, you know, painful, theoretically. And, you know, because you're not going to have such extreme pressure on all these feeling sensory areas of your body when you're having a baby. You're going to feel it, but it's going to be more of a pressure in that area and less of an, ow, 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 I feel that, you know. So like I said before too, this to me is very magical. Just the way, you know, it's kind of like, whoa, the penis is turned on. It's getting big. It's even cooler to me that as an internal organ, when you get turned on, the vagina lengthens and it widens. But it's not as though the vagina doesn't come out of you. It's just your body accommodates it. I think that's so interesting. So the last little bit I want to talk about is the cervix. Because where does the vagina go except to the cervix? We're kind of traveling up our body here. We started with the vulva and the opening to the vagina. Now we're going up the vagina and we're going, next we'll be going into the uterus sometime soon. But really the cervix is part of the uterus. I didn't know this until recently. I thought it was a separate thing, you know, between the vagina and the uterus. It's part of the uterus. It's the lower you know, portion of the uterus. It's about 2 to 3 centimeters long, which isn't really that big when you think about it. And it's sort of cylindrical. And if you look it up online, you see pictures of it. It looks like a shiny circular plug. Like, it looks very like pristine and shiny and nice, as does the upper portion of the vagina. There's not as many textury things going on up there. I mean, it looks clean and nice and pinkish and great. I mean, it looks like so healthy and awesome. And then there's a little hole in the cervix, of course, because the sperm needs to go somewhere, and the baby's got to come out of that too. So the cervical canal, it runs from the uterus to the vagina. And it is twice as large as the rest of the uterus when you're a kid, which I think is neat. So this is really a cool testament to how our bodies change. So when you think about now as an adult, you know your uterus is bigger than your cervix. But when you're a kid, the cervical portion of you is twice as big as your uterus when you're a kid. And then it definitely gets smaller in proportion to your uterus after you go through puberty. Another thing that makes the cervix so fantastic is that it's such a tiny, there's such a little hole in it, but this is the amazing part of our body that has to stretch out, naturally dilate and get wider in order for a baby to begin to come through. Like I've mentioned before, you have to dilate to about 10 centimeters, which is like about 4 inches, which is really wide considering that it's like so tiny, the hole is tiny in it before that. Your cervix has to kind of thin and it has to dilate so that it's less of a barrier for the baby to come through. So when you think about it, something that's such a small, tight hole, that's like a perfect, you know, sort of cylindrical shaped, glossy thing, its ability to change in such an extreme circumstance and then recover, you know, it can stretch like that. It's just so impressive. Also, a lot of, the cervix lets go of, you know, some mucus. It kind of creates a mucus and stuff. And during your cycle, some of your discharge is this. A lot of your discharge is this, is your cervical mucus. That's most of it. It's coming off of your cervix. So when you have discharge, like also what comes out of your vagina, it's coming from the cervix. That's where it's mostly coming from, which I think is neat. Of course, your period's a different story, but just your average everyday goo, it's a cervical thing, which I didn't know. And the last thing I really want to say about the cervix is how active of a part of our body it really is. I don't know if we really think of it as being active. It's definitely active during childbirth, but oftentimes the cervix, they've actually filmed this with a teeny little camera that they stuck on the end of a guy's wiener and went in there. When a woman has an orgasm, the opening to the cervix kind of pulses, almost like a fish's mouth or something. And it actually sucks some sperm in, which nobody really knows if that's the reason it pulses. Who knows? But what an interesting thing, how active that even that upper part of your body is in a situation that's a sexual or a birth experience. So that's all I wanted to say today, which was a lot of information about the vagina and the cervix, everything you really wanted or needed to know. So thank you so much for listening to the O Woman podcast. I want to remind you to subscribe on iTunes, to rank the episodes, rate the episodes, give us some stars. check us out on Facebook, O Woman podcast on Facebook, and check out the website. All of my episodes are posted there. You can check out episode archives, which is the third menu option from the top, to listen to all of the other 45 episodes that you might have missed, get caught up on who the heck I am and why I'm talking about this. but check that out. And then always you can email me, emma@owomanpodcast.com, with questions, comments, or any ideas. So thanks so much for listening. As always, I loved it, and I can't wait to talk with you guys tomorrow. Bye.